Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Truck stop brothels run by a web of ex-cons. A Commonwealth attorney wasted on whiskey and power. Protection exchanged for cash and flesh. This is Hooker Game, Criminals and Libertines in the South. And I am your host and lifelong wayward woman, Dr. Lindsay Byron. Listen to Hooker Game, Criminals and Libertines in the South on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On March 14, 1998, the body of 19-year-old Anthony Galati was found alongside a desolate stretch of road outside of Sacramento, California. The case remained cold for over a year until a young man named Israel Sept went to prison on a gun charge and offered authorities information about the murder. According to Sept, he was at an apartment when two others, Angela Dvorsky and Jeremy Puckett, assaulted, robbed, and abducted Anthony Galati. Then, according to Sept, he got into Anthony's car with them to keep him safe from further violence, but failed when they arrived at that stretch of road where Galati was fatally shot. In the weeks following the murder, Angela Dvorsky also turned up dead, leaving only Jeremy Puckett to stand trial, where Sept made good on his plea deal and sent Jeremy away for life. But this is wrongful conviction. Wrongful conviction has always given voice to innocent people in prison. Now we're expanding that voice to you. Call us at 833-207-4666 and leave us a message. Tell us how these powerful, often tragic stories make you feel. Outraged? Inspired? Motivated? We want to know. We may even include your story in a future episode. Call us, 833-207-4666. Welcome back to Wrongful Conviction. Today we have a story out of Northern California. In the years following legislation that had been passed to stop, ironically, prosecutions just like this one, that use snitch testimony that is not corroborated by independent evidence. Nevertheless, a path was made with the help of other incentivized witnesses to let that happen. And here to help tell this story is an attorney with the Northern California Innocence Project, Karen Sununu Towery. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And our guest of honor today, the man who lived and somehow survived this nightmare, Jeremy Puckett. Jeremy, welcome.
Thank you.
And this crime took place in a place called Rancho Cordova, kind of outside of Sacramento. Anyway, is that where you grew up? And what was your family life like?
Well, I grew up in Sacramento, California, pretty much all over the place, mainly Rancho Cordova itself. And we moved around a lot, you know, and didn't have the most money or anything. But, you know, my parents, they did the best they could and gave me, my brother and my sister, the best life that we could have. So I had a great childhood. It was good. It was really good.
In the late 80s and early 90s, the crack epidemic affected many of Jeremy's friends, but not him. Instead, Jeremy became a father whose clear head served him well one night when his young family faced a grave situation.
The house caught on fire while me and my son's mother, Cara, was sleeping. And as I woke up, I opened up the door and there was just smoke coming up the stairs. So I went across the hall, grabbed my son. And because of all the smoke and everything that was coming from downstairs, I knew we had to jump out the window. When we jumped out the window, at that time, I knew that her sister was asleep downstairs. And so I kicked in the door to get her out. However, when her sister was coming out the door, that's when she told me that one of my good friends was sleeping in my son's auntie's room, basically. And by that time, the house was up in flames and there's nothing we can do to save him.
Oh, man. What was his name?
Benny Campbell. And I think the worst part of it was is I heard a scream as he was trying to get out. And like, this is like not just a friend, but like he's like one of my best friends. So just to not be able to save him, you know, and it still affects me, I guess you can say. It's just, I still miss him to this day.
Jeremy displayed true heroism that night, but unbeknownst to him, his friend Israel Sept harbored some resentments over Benny's death.
I believe I met him through Benny. I thought we had a good relationship. I thought we were good friends. You know, he came to my house. I would go to his house. But yeah, I guess we weren't as good as friends as I thought that we were.
Israel Sept became integral to Jeremy's wrongful conviction for a murder that in part began at the apartment of a young man named William Van Hill.
This was a small one-bedroom apartment in the heart of Rancho Cordova, and William Van Hill would let people come to the house and deal drugs, and he would get some drugs through that. And he also was letting a guy named Larry Biddlebrooks crash there every once in a while. And so on the particular night in March 1998, Larry Middlebrooks was there. Van Hill was pretty much in his bedroom. A woman named Patty Scott Bostick was there. She and Larry Middlebrooks were heavily using crack cocaine that night and drinking a lot. And then Israel Sept was there.
Jeremy planned to hang out with Israel Sept that night after a family gathering.
We got had a little get-together. It wasn't a party or nothing. We had a little barbecue. It was me, my sister's friend, Shante, my son's mother, Akara. My mom was there. My dad was there. There was a few people there that could all testify to my whereabouts this night prior to my leaving and coming back. I remember talking to Israel. He told me where he's going to be at. I showed up. And as I seen how things were progressing at the apartment where he was at, I pulled myself out of that and went back home.
The victim of the murder, Anthony Galati, showed up wanting to buy some drugs to celebrate his 19th birthday. He was by himself.
Galati didn't look like the usual crack user, I guess you would say. So when he showed up, I was like, this guy looks like he might be the police. And I told Sept this. And Sept was still intent on selling this guy drugs. And that's when I decided to pull myself out of that situation and leave because I was not going to be involved in something that got myself in trouble.
And Galati was a young
guy,
white guy that everyone called the preppy because he didn't look like anyone else in the apartment.
It's not to judge anybody, but it just looked out of place.
But he saw this young, attractive woman, Angela Dvorsky, and he left the apartment, but then told his friends he wanted to go back and meet up with the girl.
I didn't know Angela Dvorsky. The only people I guess you could say I really knew was Israel and Larry. That's about it.
According to all accounts, Angela Dvorsky was there with her boyfriend, James Reeves, also referred to as J-Mo. But the accounts diverge on what happened between the time Jeremy left the apartment that night and when Anthony Galati's body was found on March 14, 1998, on White Rock Road.
Just a driver going down the road spotted him and called it into police. He was at the side of the road in an unincorporated area of Sacramento County. It appeared that he had been shot out there. His hands were tied behind his back. Really an assassination-type murder. Originally, they thought he had one bullet wound to the head, but after autopsy, they realized he had been shot twice in the head.
The medical examiner later testified that the time of death was likely between 5 and 7 a.m. on Saturday, March 14th. 2 days later, Anthony Galati's Pontiac Firebird was found set ablaze in a parking lot, and then, as police continued to question known associates, Angela Dvorsky's body washed up in the American River on May 1st of 98. She had been stabbed 12 times. Her case remains cold to this day, but Galati's investigation was reinvigorated when Israel Sept was convicted of unlawful discharge of a firearm in October of 99.
As soon as you are taken to prison, your DNA is taken in California. Israel believed that his DNA was going to implicate him in the murder of Anthony Galati. So he contacted the sheriff's office to tell a story that would take the focus away from him and onto someone else. He then was interviewed by the Sacramento Sheriff's Office 3 or 4 times, and each story was inconsistent.
Jeremy's jury never heard about Sept's motivation. Nevertheless, it appears that Sept bounced inconsistent stories off the Sacramento Sheriff's Department until they landed on a narrative in which Anthony Galati came to William Van Hill's apartment to buy some drugs, and Sept alleged that Jeremy pistol-whipped and tied up Anthony with the help of Angela Dvorsky. Sept said that he followed them out to Anthony's car, where he allegedly told Anthony that he would come along and keep him safe. Then, Jeremy allegedly drove them all out to White Rock Road, took Anthony out of the car, shot him, and drove off, dropping Sept at a motel. Shortly after this account, Jeremy was brought in for questioning.
They were just asking me questions about a murder that happened. And like, I have to know something about this because, you know, I'm from the neighborhood or whatever. And I don't have no idea what they're talking about. I believe they mentioned Israel. And that's when I started trying to like piece little things together. I was like, oh, this is what's going on. But I still had no idea of what happened after I had left the apartment where he was at this night.
Curiously, only Sept was charged in June of 2000 and taken to trial in March 2001.
Because all they have is this so-called confession by Israel. And so they have to try them separately because Israel will have the opportunity to take the Fifth Amendment and then there'd be no case. And they can't just use the statement because Jeremy wouldn't have had a chance to cross-examine Israel. So they had to try them separately. And so they started with Israel. And then, of course, he folded after opening statement, but he cut a deal. I mean, he went from life without the possibility of parole to what, 11 years?
8 months.
8 months. But when he was actually sentenced, he even got a better deal.
Shortly after Sept's lenient plea deal for robbery and accessory to murder, they arrested Jeremy.
All I remember is just being at work and I was called to the office and I had a feeling like something in my gut, like something was just wasn't right. I walked into the office. That's when I was basically surrounded by officers, placed in handcuffs, placed in the car. And I was like, you gotta have the wrong person because I didn't hurt nobody. I didn't kill nobody. Like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. But like, you gotta have the wrong person. And they're like, no, we got you, this and that, whatever. And I'm trying to convince them, and you know, but they didn't want to hear nothing I had to say.
You're listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early and ad-free by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances. And the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I pretty much pieced together that something was being pinned on me from Israel. I believe during the initial interview with my investigator, he was still sticking to his story that it was all me. And then during the second one, that's when he recanted his story.
Prior to trial, Israel Sepp recanted in an interview with Jeremy's private investigator and gave some version of the truth, saying something about Middlebrooks having set up Anthony Galati for a robbery and, quote, Jeremy was not involved. Jeremy knew nothing about robbing anyone. That's the God's truth, end quote. Wow. Sepp never said who was responsible, though. But with this recantation in the bag, it appears that Jeremy's attorney didn't feel the need to develop an alibi defense or look into any of the state's evidence, including Israel Sepp's motel receipt that was alleged to align with the morning of March 14th.
The motel receipt shows that Sepp registered at this motel at 4:20 a.m. and there was a number on the receipt, 6718. The receipt was messy, but if you look at the next receipt, 6719, with a totally independent party registering at 6:10 a.m., you realize it was on the morning of the 13th.
And there was one prior to that as well.
Yeah, and the one prior to it. That's correct. So there's no doubt that this hotel entry was on the 13th. But however, the Sacramento DA just said it's on the 14th. She just talked about it as though he registered the morning of the 14th.
This could mean one of a few things. Perhaps the medical examiner was mistaken about the time of death between 5 and 7 a.m. on the 14th, or perhaps the state glossed over the discrepancy in order to align the findings of the autopsy with the morning after Jeremy had actually made an appearance at Van Hill's apartment, March 12th into the 13th. This could have been uncovered by Jeremy's attorney had he just bothered to look into his alibi. In addition, it's important to note that according to 1991 California legislation, jailhouse informant testimony has to be corroborated by independent evidence. Perhaps the prosecutor, Marjorie Kohler, used this motel receipt from the 13th to check that box for a crime that occurred on the 14th.
None of the witnesses or anybody testified to the 13th. They were told from the prosecution of what day this happened.
Jeremy's right. The prosecution would just say, let me draw your attention to the night of the 13th or the morning of the 14th. So witnesses just went along with that. No one said, oh, wait a minute, this happened on a Thursday night.
And this wasn't the only dirty trick. In her opening statements, Kohler raised the specter of the fire that killed Benny Campbell, as well as the murder of Angela Dvorsky.
They tried to implicate Jeremy in that murder.
She already knew she had a weak case, so she was trying to throw everything in to make me look bad from the get-go anyway.
Jeremy's attorney asked the judge to declare a mistrial, and when the judge asked Kohler if she had any evidence to corroborate her implications, she said that there was evidence linking Jeremy, but just not enough to charge him.
But that wasn't true, and she was admonished by the judge that this wasn't proper.
She was actually told to tell the jury that I had nothing to do with that, and she said no.
Yeah.
So the judge himself had to do it.
The judge instructed the jury that the prosecutor could not corroborate her implications, and then the trial proceeded.
The state presents Middlebrooks. Middlebrooks said he was in the bathroom doing cocaine with Patty Scott Bostick and that he didn't think that Jeremy was there. And Patty Scott Bostick always said that she never looked out the door, and then she got on the stand, and then she said she heard Jeremy yelling. She had never testified to that before, but we found out later that she wanted to testify favorably because she was on probation at the time she testified, and the jury was never told this. Again, the jury has to hear if a witness has a motive to make an entirely new statement that had never been made before. So that's what Patty said. And then Van Hill said he saw Anthony Galati being removed by two black men, and based on their height difference, he thought it might be Israel and Jeremy. Again, that was a new statement made at trial.
In his earlier statements, Van Hill said that the two black men were about the same height. Then at trial, he said that his memory had improved since his first interview just after the crime. In addition, he described Israel Sept as being 5'4", much shorter than his actual height, 5'10", which notably is not much shorter than Jeremy at 6'1".
His story is all over the place.
We learned during our investigation, unfortunately, that Mr. Van Hill had many psychological problems. But of course, the jury never heard that.
But of course, none of the supporting testimony mattered as much as Israel Sept. And we don't know what happened between his recantation and trial. But perhaps the prosecutor reminded him about the deal they had made.
Either testify against me and say it was all me, or they're going to take his deal back and he was facing life without the possibility of parole. He just went back to the script he was given when he took the deal. What was crazy about that is that prior to being into the courtroom, we were in separate cells, like basically across from each other. And I asked him personally, like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this to me? And I still remember him saying, like, I know, I'm sorry. And when I get back in there, I'm gonna go in there and tell him the truth that you didn't have nothing to do with it. Right. But once soon we get back into the courtroom, it was like everything that was just said, he completely forgot. And then he just got the bat to point the finger right back at me.
Jeremy's attorney was able to cross-examine Sept with not only inconsistencies with his prior statements, but also his recantation.
Of course, Sept denied it. And that's why I was shocked that my trial attorney didn't call their investigator to rebut Israel.
Wait. So he didn't even bother to call the investigator to present the recantation?
It's unbelievable. It's absolutely. I tell people this story that the attorney had a recantation he didn't put on and they can't believe it. Let alone the date of the murder is even wrong. It's just unbelievable.
The jury had not heard the motivations of those testifying, as well as the full recantation by the state's star witness. So they predictably returned a guilty verdict for first-degree murder, robbery, but curiously not guilty for unlawful use of a firearm.
All I remember is hearing is, well, I was guilty of murder and everything else. I didn't hear. I blacked out. It wasn't until my mother came and visited me that she's the one who told me that I was found not guilty of the gun. And that kind of shocked me, because I thought once I heard guilty of murder, I felt I was guilty of everything. Just everything just blacked out. I heard nothing else. And I just basically see my life just wash away like it was nothing.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Truck stop brothels run by a web of ex-cons. A Commonwealth attorney wasted on whiskey and power. Protection exchanged for cash and flesh. This is Hooker Gate, Criminals and Libertines in the South. And I am your host, Dr. Lindsay Byron. Join me as I bring to life a wild menagerie of country boys, kingpins, and working girls living the high life. Until it all came crashing down. Listen to Hooker Gate on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you want early access to new episodes and exclusive bonus content, completely ad-free, be sure to subscribe to iHeart True Crime Plus, available exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
Walk into the yard and all you see is these big brick walls, and you just realize like you're really in prison, like you're gonna spend the rest of your life here for something you didn't do. It was heartbreaking. I couldn't sleep for the first couple of nights because I couldn't even believe I was in the situation I was even in. It's a doggy dog world in there, you know. It's a battle of the fittest, and it's a survival instinct that you must have in prison to make it through. I've seen people come in prison and not make it at all. I've seen people commit suicide before. I've seen people get killed in prison. I've seen all type of things happen. I've seen people overdose. I've seen basically just about everything in there. And thank God that I was able to put my faith in God and keep fighting. And I guess this is always frustrating to know that you're doing everything you can, but knowing it's not enough.
After his initial appeal, Jeremy fought his case pro se, meaning on his own without an attorney, from inside of his prison cell.
And of course, it was so hard for Jeremy because he doesn't have anyone to find the evidence that's been suppressed. He's banging up against a brick wall because he can't get into the DA file, into his own file, into the file of Angela Dvorsky, out on the street to interview people.
I was almost ready to give up because I was tired of getting all the denials on my own. And thank God I had my sister and my mom, my cousins and everybody, a strong core of my family that still believed in me no matter what. And I look back on it, and I think it was my daughter. My daughter saved my life. I'll never forget that day. She came to saw me, and I think my sister went to go get something to eat for us. And my son and my niece, they went to the player, and I was telling my daughter, like, oh, why don't you go play with your brother and your cousin? And she's like, no, I want to stay here with you. And I remember her looking at me, and she was like, She's like, when you coming home? When you going to come home? Because I want you home. And that's when I knew right there, I had to keep fighting. If not for myself, for my kids, I couldn't give up.
After about 14 long years of denials in appellate court, Karen and the Northern California Innocence Project took on Jeremy's case and were able to uncover what Jeremy never could have from the inside.
Sepp told the detectives that a man with the nickname J-Mo brought Angela Dvorsky to the apartment. And that was a very important sentence that he said that I don't think Jeremy's trial attorney appreciated the importance of it at the time, because the sheriff's detectives had suppressed the evidence related to Angela Dvorsky.
Much of the discovery that should have come to Jeremy's defense attorney remained hidden in the Angela Dvorsky murder file. I'm talking about 700 pages worth.
Pages and pages of evidence, witness after witness, saying J-Mo had control over Angela Dvorsky. And Angela's diary talked about the control that J-Mo had over her, and that J-Mo and Angela Dvorsky did set up robberies. They would use her as a lure for young men who wanted to spend some time with her, to put it nicely. And instead, they would rob the young man. In the suppressed evidence, we learned that there were two witnesses that actually saw the set-up robberies going on. And once you know that, and know that J-Mo is controlling her, then the story starts to make sense. The story Sepp told didn't make any sense. But this is a robbery gone bad, and they've set up Anthony Galati. We learned that J-Mo went to an apartment where a gun was later found, and we believe that is the gun used to pistol whip Anthony Galati. And the investigating detective had said that this gun was connected to the Galati murder, and yet that information was never turned over to Jeremy's attorney.
So the state hid not only the motives of all of the trial witnesses who testified falsely, but now it was also discovered that they'd hidden a way more compelling suspect, James Reeves, or J-Mo, whose estranged wife, Connie Goines, gave a statement, sworn statement, in 2015, in which she said that J-Mo had always said that Jeremy had nothing to do with Anthony Galati's robbery and murder, and he knew that because he was there at the time of the crime. Moreover, this is supported by the fact that Angela Dvorsky's diary contains the names of 121 men, and get this, not one of them is Jeremy.
There's no evidence that they knew one another. And during the investigation of the Dvorsky murder, many witnesses were shown Jeremy's picture, friends of hers. No one could identify Jeremy. They ran in completely separate and distinct circles.
The choice to pursue Jeremy over J-Mo made me wonder if perhaps investigators were protecting J-Mo. Maybe he was cooperating in other cases, but that doesn't seem to fit here.
The sheriff never interviewed J-Mo. This is Investigation 101. You interview everyone who was there that night. They never interviewed him. My theory is that the police were negligent. I think Sepp was protecting J-Mo. That's my theory of the case. What do you think, Jeremy?
I think they were so solely focused on me that they didn't care about anybody else.
That was an easy prosecution. We don't have to do any more work. If you accuse Jeremy, how can he defend himself other than to say, I had nothing to do with it? By the time he's interviewed, he can hardly remember that night. You know, it's a year and a half later.
The Northern California Innocence Project, along with attorneys from Simpson, Thatcher, and Bartlett, filed a state habeas, which they had to fight all the way up to the state Supreme Court to finally get a hearing where they presented this absolute mountain of Brady material, the recantation evidence, the statement from Connie Goins, as well as an expert to point out the discrepancy between dates in the state's narrative and the time of death.
Dr. Melnick was incredible. There was no question by the time she was done testifying that they had the date of the murder wrong. And they actually conceded that finally.
Finally.
Correct? At the very end of the hearing, they conceded that. The gun evidence came in that they had suppressed. J-Mo had made this statement by the time of the hearing to one of our investigators. And so he said, no, Jeremy had nothing to do with the murder. I was there. So everything went right in the hearing. I think we were feeling positive.
I mean, I felt good, but of course, you just never know where it's going to go. And then the day that I found out was one of the most happiest and craziest days ever. I finally got my case overturned.
It was pretty emotional.
Very.
And of course, it was the day that California shut down for COVID.
Like a few days after.
The good news is you're getting out. The bad news is it's a shutdown.
Friday 13th at that. Well, what was crazy is everybody else was losing their minds. And I'm like, oh, y'all think this is nothing.
When we're all home crying in our soup that we can't go out, Jeremy gets a driver's license, a passport, a job, a car, housing. He lived life, and it was just amazing. And, you know, we needed to get his record cleared and all that. And everything now was slowed down because of COVID. The hearing for factual innocence, that didn't come till the following January, January. Right?
It's kind of shocking when we had the factual innocence thing, because she told me it was going to be like 2 or 3 days. And we was only there for like 15, 20 minutes. And when he finally said what he said, I had to turn to her. So I didn't know what happened. I was like, what just happened? She's like, you won. You're factually innocent now. And it was just a shock for everybody.
Jeremy was awarded statutory compensation from California, just under $1 million. And as of February 2022, he's been pursuing civil litigation.
I'm playing a small role. Again, Simpson Thatcher, the law firm, is working on it. And Jeremy has just inspired everyone in that firm to get behind him. And we're very hopeful that we'll be successful. But again, Sacramento, they continue to fight us, even though Jeremy was wrongfully convicted, served 19 years for a crime he didn't commit, and has been found factually innocent.
In the meantime, life goes on, and Jeremy has been doing his best to adjust to life on the outside.
I have a job. I officially bought me a house about 7 months ago. I have my grandkids. Building my relationship with my kids, who were just, my kids were 2 and 1 when I initially got locked up. When I came out, they were grown. So trying to rebuild that relationship has been ongoing. It's a little bumpy sometimes, but you know, the love, you can see the love is there. I'm really in a relationship now. So that's going good. So life's been pretty good so far. I'm just looking forward to continue to grow every day, make life even better.
Jeremy's freedom would not have been possible without the dedication of Karen Sununu Towery and the other great folks at the Northern California Innocence Project, which we will link in the episode description. Please support them and follow their work, as there are countless people like Jeremy who still need their help. And with that, I want to turn to closing arguments, where, of course, you know, I get the privilege of thanking each of you, first of all, Karen and Jeremy, and then turning off my microphone, kicking back in my chair with my eyes closed and my headphones on, and just listening to anything else you want to share with me and with our fantastic audience. So, Karen, it's traditional. You go first and then just sort of hand the mic off to Jeremy and he'll take us off into the sunset.
Well, I feel very honored to have been on the Journey to Justice with Jeremy Puckett. I've gained a friend and learned a lot through his ordeal. And he's let me enter his life. He's shared his most intimate details. And I believe we've built a friendship out of this crazy situation. How the two of us came together is the stuff stories are made of. But it's been my honor to work with Jeremy, and I look forward to wrapping up the civil suit and still maintaining that friendship.
And I just want to thank you for having me here and be able to tell my story. And I want also want to just thank people like Karen, the whole NCIP organization and the whole Innocence Project organization itself, as well as Buzz and everybody from the team, from the Simpson Thatcher, from Don, for everybody who helped me with my case. And then I think most importantly, I think I would like to say is that if there is somebody listening to this who is innocent, locked up, to keep fighting, to keep going, I don't care who says what. If you know you're innocent, keep going, because your day will come. I don't know when, I can't tell you how, but your day will come. The truth always prevails.
Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts. I want to thank our production team, Connor Hall and Kathleen Fink, as well as my fellow executive producers, Jeff Kempler, Kevin Wardis, and Jeff Clyburn. The music in this production was supplied by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer, Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us across all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on Instagram at It's Jason Flom. Wrongful Conviction is a production of Lava for Good Podcasts in association with Signal Company No. 1.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Truck stop brothels run by a web of ex-cons. A Commonwealth attorney wasted on whiskey and power. Protection exchanged for cash and flesh. This is Hooker Game, Criminals and Libertines in the South. And I am your host and lifelong wayward woman, Dr. Lindsay Byron. Listen to Hooker Game, Criminals and Libertines in the South on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.